We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Today we are brought to you by Shady Rays. They have world-class sunglasses that are just as good as any expensive pair you can find. Shady Rays also has the most insane protection in all of eyewear. Every pair of sunglasses is backed by lost and broken replacement. If you lose or break a pair, even on day one, they will send you a new pair, no questions asked. Get a pair for yourself by going to ShadyRays.com and use promo code Bronx for 50% off two or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. Scott, this is the episode where we talk about how Vlad Jr. punked the Yankees, but that's just going to hide the fact that the Yankees' offense is just putrid.
Well, it's the same situation as we talked about last episode. You still have a traveling circus of guys at the bottom of the lineup that isn't really helping matters. And yeah, Vlad Guerrero clearly loves beating the New York Yankees. Another one of these guys that are like, oh, I'll never ever in a million years play for the Yankees, but I love beating them. I love playing against them. I love doing, you know, all of the bad guy things. You make it an evil opponent. I'm good with that. But the guy is very good. Very good.
Yeah, you mentioned like the bottom of the lineup traveling circus of nobodies. Yeah, that's true. But like Aaron Judge had a terrible homestand. Gleyber Torres has been ice cold. So it's like even the guys at the top of the order haven't been producing. The Vlad Jr. stuff, yeah. So I was going back into some of the comments on him. So obviously, was it last winter or this past winter, he talked about how he would never play for the Yankees. He loves beating Yankees fans and the Yankees, and asked if he would ever play for them. He said, no, not even dead. And then he doubled down on that, saying it's a personal thing. It goes back with my family. That's my decision, and I will never change that. What do we think he's talking about there? Because it's pretty well known at this point. We talked about it in the Cashman episode, the Cashman history stuff. Vlad Sr. had a contract ready to go with the Yankees, and then that fell through because George went over Cashman's head to sign Sheffield. Do you think Vlad had some ill will because of how that went down? Do you think that could be what he's talking about, or is it something completely different?
Well, if it is that, and it's because Vlad Guerrero wanted to play for the Yankees and then it didn't work, Steinbrenner put the kibosh on it, then yeah, he might be talking shit the entire time about the New York Yankees and what should have been and how, you know, his bat could have done more things, and they had a deal and he wanted to play in New York and then it didn't happen. So I don't know. It's complete speculation. The other side of the coin is if you're looking at like, you know, how Griffey hated the Yankees, there were family issues. Now Ken Griffey played for the Yankees, and there were a lot more things that were deeper than just baseball that went into his hatred. So who knows? I mean, there could be a million things why, but it does make sense. If they were very close to signing him and had something going, and then it didn't happen, maybe Guerrero's talking shit all the way through the family, and that's what he grew up in.
That's the only thing I could think of, because there was never anything in Vlad's playing days where there was like, you know, he didn't get hit a lot by the Yankees or anything like that. Nothing stood out in my mind as to why Vlad Jr. would hate the Yankees so much, other than the fact that he's been a Blue Jay and the you know, division rival and all that stuff. And yeah, he chirps a lot. Like, he chirps a hell of a lot. Him and Manoah, just the two of them, just constantly trying to get the Yankees riled up and get Yankees fans like riled up. It's kind of like also a little pathetic by them. It's like, yeah, like you're good, you guys are good, but you haven't been better than the Yankees in the past 4 years when you guys have been there, and like, they're not the number one rivalry for us. Like, you're number five, number four, maybe
number right? four or five. Who's ahead of them besides the Astros? And are you considering the Red Sox ahead of them still? I'm not. The Tampa?
No, I mean, obviously the Red Sox are not.
I call them a top three. I think they're a top three. They're absolutely a top three rival with Tampa and Toronto. I'm sorry, with Tampa and Houston.
I would rank them still Red Sox ahead of the Blue Jays as far as like in my mind who I think is a bigger rival and I want to beat more. It's number one Astros. We talked about this by a long shot. Number two, maybe Tampa. Number three, Red Sox. Number four, I don't think about the Blue Jays. I don't think about them.
I don't think about the,
except when they're playing.
I don't think about the Red Sox anymore, to be very honest, as far as, you know, them being competition.
I still do. Maybe
the Blue Jays.
Maybe that's my
the Blue
own
Jays
problem.
Have a very, very good young nucleus, and they're
and I they, know they're better than the Red
talk.
Sox.
They talk. So yeah, I do think about them, and I do want to beat them. I absolutely want to beat them. Whenever I see another now team going up and individual players, you know, act in a certain way, getting swag just because they're coming up against the Yankees and they're getting up a little different for that and they have a good team. Yeah, add that into the AL East rivalry. They bother me. They do. They bother me. And I like him. He's as far as a player, like I have respect for him because he's a very good player. So this is definitely building some hatred for me.
He's shushing the Yankees fans as he's rounding third base after he hit a crushing home run off of Clark Schmidt today. I mean, yeah, he's antagonistic.
Uh-huh. And that's why, I mean, those are the players that you start really hating, the ones that talk shit, but then back it up.
And he also said his comments about how the Yankees were the easiest to play, even though they went under the Blue Jays had a losing record against the Yankees last year. And then Manoah, like, we touched on the Manoah Cole stuff, but Manoah calling Gerrit Cole the biggest cheater in baseball history. It's like, okay, like, calm down, dude.
I mean, these guys are definitely going for a little bit of a WWE exchange.
That's what I think they're doing. That's exactly
Manoah. I could see doing that. Vlad Guerrero, you know, I mean, and Manoah pitched well too, but Vlad Guerrero is lined up for it, and he's got even Bichette. Like, we had the other brother, maybe there's some animosity there. I don't know. They could build anything up to make it a thing and then use it and talk about it and fuel themselves, you know, whether it's fabricated or not. It kind of doesn't matter.
So in that situation today where Schmidt is facing Vlad with runner on first base, this was the best Schmidt had looked all season so far. He cruised through the first five innings of the game. So as far as that game is concerned, there's no reason to pull him in that scenario. Volpe made his first error of the season in a spot that seemingly seemed not that big of a deal. Then Glaber makes an amazing play on the Bichette ball up the middle. They get the force out, and you're like, okay, maybe there's going to be no harm, no foul here. And Schmidt just leaves a spinning slider in the middle of the plate, and Vlad pounds it into the left field seats.
And sweeper.
Shitty sweeper. you've heard of city sweepers. This is a shitty sweeper.
So, yeah, it was a shitty sweeper. He threw it a lot today.
So then they're down, and they're down 3-0. Varsho hits the home run right after that, and he gets pulled from the game. And then here comes King in. And, you know, I'm watching the game with my dad today. My parents were in town. And so I'm watching the game with my dad, and we're both there like, it's, oh, now you're going to King down 3-0. And King didn't look great today. He gave up a run. But I don't think Clark Schmidt has earned the right to this point in the season to let him face Vlad in that situation in a nothing-nothing game, even though there's only a runner on first base when you've got King ready to go.
What was his pitch count at that moment? Because
I don't care. His ERA was
I'm asking what his pitch count was, because it was the third time through the order, and when you get to that point, like, yeah, you should be thinking about it. No matter how the game has gone, you're coming now to the meat of the order, the most impactful player in that lineup with Vlad Guerrero, and you're flirting with the end of the Clark Schmidt outing at that point. So if you're possibly pulling him, I would absolutely bring a specialty guy in to face Guerrero. I would have done that because, you know, look, ERA 8 in the past, like, yes, those all are considerations, but I have a guy now that was, you know, outstanding through 5 innings into the 6th inning. Like, yes, there aren't signs that we're looking for and we're seeing for him that he's going to give up a big home run. But at that point, you know, he's not going to get past that inning. You're not going to bring him out for the 7th. Pitch count was probably, I know he was around 40, 50 with 4 innings and 5 innings. So he had a pretty decent pitch count, but that third time around in the lineup, that's what I'd be looking at and trying to get this guy in a high note. So it's a tough second guess.
Yeah. Schmidt was only at like 70 pitches. He finished with 76 pitches in that situation. So to your point, you know, it might be a difficult second guess, but as we were listening to the post-game press conference, and just for our thousands and thousands of YouTube viewers, you might have noticed, like, hey, something maybe looks different a little bit. Scott's changed locations. Andrew's wearing something different. What's going on now? They maybe sound a little bit more tired than they did yesterday. It is now 8:30 in the morning, Monday.
Oh, I'm way less tired. Way less tired right now.
Started at 5 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday with some technical difficulties. Yeah, almost 800 episodes in, still not immune to technical.
No, internet. Internet gives no Fs when it wants to go out.
One day we should just do a podcast reminiscing about all of our many technical difficulties and the amount of times that I was wanting to quit this show because of technical difficulties.
I forget all of them. They're out of my mind. I'm like,
I remember one specifically where I was doing the audio editing for it.
And that must have been bad times.
I had to get to work in the morning, and we had like started at like 6:30 in the morning, and it was just a complete cluster. We maybe recorded 20 minutes of content, and we were recording for like an hour and a half, and I had to somehow piece together an hour and a half episode or an hour episode. It was just a nightmare. Anyway, neither here nor there. You just mentioned something, Scott, before we started recording that was beneficial to listen to Boone's press conference after the Sunday game, talking about the key situation we were just discussing with Vlad coming to the plate in a nothing-nothing game against Clark Schmidt, who has been awful to this point in the season. Yes, he was awesome on Sunday, his best start of his career, I think career high in strikeouts, and he really did look good in the first, you know, 5 innings. He was locating his sinker. He really did look good. But Boone's comments alluding to, you know, reading between the lines, he should have gone to King a batter or two earlier than he actually did.
Yeah, the question was just phrased to him. I don't remember who. I don't know if it was Meredith or who actually asked the question, but it was positioned basically like, oh, third time through the lineup, Vlad Guerrero in that spot, you know, and you could tell that Boone knew that he should have taken him out at that point, but also at the same point, he wanted to give him the opportunity to get through that inning is what he said. So I see both sides. I do. I understand, like, you have a young guy that needs some momentum, that's really cruising, and like, if you get through that, then, you know, it's a really high.
But isn't that really momentum? Isn't
I'd say the momentum is already there, if that's what you're going to say.
Yeah. You had 5 dominant innings.
Career high strikeouts. Like, the momentum was already built.
And Volpe makes the error. And Volpe took ownership of that error after the game. I actually love this quote. I saw this. He was asked
good fielders get
if the ball took a bad hop. He said, I don't think good fielders get bad hops, which is, that's an A fucking plus answer.
Someone fed that kid that line a long time ago.
Whatever. I don't care. Even if he didn't write it, he said it.
I actually watched that again to go back and hear the exact thing that he said, because I didn't pick it up the first time clearly. Yeah,
that's a good answer.
Kid,
good answer, kid.
Kid's got the Yankee answers, man.
So he you know, that error obviously plays a huge factor there. But I think Bichette's ball, I can't remember if we said this in the first 10 minutes of recording yesterday. I think Bichette gets on regardless. So I think Vlad, no matter what, is coming up with a runner on first base in that situation. To that point, you're letting him face Vlad for the third time is too dangerous to how bad Clark Schmidt has been all season. And you already had established momentum there. He's already proven that he pitched a good game. You have King ready to go because apparently King is predetermined to pitch on Clark Schmidt days. That's a whole other potential issue. But you've got Michael King ready to go in the bullpen. That's the time to go to him. You do not let Vlad face Clark Schmidt there and crush a hanging slider. So
this is the type of stuff.
It's an easy call.
This is the type of stuff that drives me a little nuts with Boone, is because when you talk about philosophy and you look at the things that he's doing, the other day, last week, when he was at Minnesota, when Holmes came in,
yep, to face the top of the Minnesota
in
lineup.
The eighth inning, you're using him, yep, as a fire extinguisher in the high leverage situation against high leverage guys at that point. There's nothing different about this, whether it's the sixth inning, the ninth inning, the,
right,
you know, as long as you're beyond a certain point, fourth inning, understood, you're trying to get length from a guy, but this is not that situation. I think once you got into the fifth inning, anything goes as far as making changes, you know, looking at the matchups, like all that stuff's in play. You're looking to win the series at this point versus an AL East team. So yeah, that is a second guess. And honestly, I'm not going to kill Boone 100 times because I could tell that he understood it was a second guess as well. I mean, obviously Monday morning quarterback here, it didn't work, but at the same time, it was right in front of your face. And not to say that King would have worked, who knows? Cause he wasn't great either.
He wasn't
so
great.
Nope. You know, that's kind of the other side of it. He wasn't great. Who knows what happens if he's in the game, but yeah, you know, and here's the other beauty listening to the post game. They call it a two-seamer. It's a two-seamer. Schmidt, Higgy, two-seamer. Fastball, two-seamer. So I'm done. I'm done with the new names. Fastball, slider, curveball. That's what we're going with. Four-seam, two-seam. That's what we're going with. Because they're all just magic names for a two-seam fastball. Sinker. The cutter is a little different.
So what did he throw Vlad there?
That one, I think, was a sweeper that didn't sweep.
Okay, so if it's a bad pitch, if the pitch leaves the ballpark, it could be a sweeper or a Sambino,
yeah,
or a,
basically,
or whatever. Yeah. But yeah. So you're right. I mean, Boone probably understands where he went wrong in the situation. What do you think of the fact that King seems to be lining up for Clark Schmidt days? It's like, are they doing this to ramp him back from the injury? Because Kay was talking about this on the broadcast too. It's like, you get him for multiple innings, which is obviously valuable, but then you lose him for multiple games, which is potentially detrimental. But this seems to be how they're going to operate him. And I wonder if this is because of the injury.
I don't know how you can correlate it directly to the injury. I mean, you're still getting more. You're still getting the energy that's happening on a particular day, but you're getting a rest day in between, but you're throwing more on the other day. So I don't, you know, I think it depends on the body and the person on how that load can affect you physically. But this is not something that hasn't been done
potentially
before.
Pitching.
We've seen Chad Green do the two inning thing. They tried to get Loaiza into that two inning thing for a bit and then it didn't work. So I think when they can find it and it works, cause it did work at one point with Michael King, then you roll with it. But,
well, that's how he was being used at the beginning of last year, but he was so good they had to use him as more of a short inning guy. And who knows, maybe that led to an injury, like changing routine. I'm not blaming that, but it could have been a factor. I'm more saying that why is he only going to be pitching on Clark Schmidt days? And if you're going to use him when the score is nothing-nothing, not when the score is 3-0 Toronto. Yeah. Because then you're kind of wasting Michael.
No, I agree with that. I don't want him to stay in the game in the seventh inning. You know, for a 3-0 game at that point, you're right. I want him to hold a lead or maintain a very close 1-0 0-0 game. Yeah. So I mean, again, like not to pile on too much on Boone, which is something I don't say often. I think that you could tell in his face that and just the way that he was talking that he would have done that different if he had the opportunity. Even if not knowing the result, he would have done it different, I think.
What is this Boone audio asking?
This is the Boone audio of him answering the question on why he didn't go to King.
Okay, yeah, play it.
I already know you had King up there for in the six. Was there not enough time to get him ready for a Guerrero, or is that just?
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to give him one more hitter there. But Springer and Bichette's at bats kind of unfolded really quick. So you know, I was kind of gonna have him up there for Vladdy potentially, but you know, after we made the great play, couple weak contact to start out the inning, I just wanted to let him, you know, have a hitter there, and obviously it cost us.
Oh, he's squirming.
It's so bad. See, you can tell.
I can hear him squirming.
It was so very clear. And that's why I'm not going to pile on him, because he knows it. So we're good here. That's
are
called,
we?
Yeah. You know,
because our manager just potentially blew the key spot.
Yeah, no. Look, again, give me some accountability. Let me know you know it. I can tell he knows it. So I'm good.
Man, you're getting
it's a
soft.
It's a long damn season. If he said no, that was the right move and stuck to his guns, then I'd be killing him right now. But he knows it.
That is true.
Double down on that. Like
yeah, oh, for sure.
In the past, he would have gaslit us and come up with 14 reasons that are all bullshit why that was the right call to leave Schmidt in there against Vlad for the third time.
I really like Schmidt's cutter against Vlad.
Yeah.
Three times specifically. Nobody's really play.
His cutter specifically against overweight right-handed hitters is really, really good this time of year when the humidity is.
That is another
47 and 50.
That is another point here is when you look at how right-handed dominant the Toronto Blue Jays lineup is, and when he's throwing that two-seamer or sinker, whatever you want to call it, that's cutting into the right-handed batter, he's got, when that thing's going right, he's a lot more effective. And Higgy was talking about that. This is what I've been preaching for so long with Clark Schmidt. I want him to throw that fastball more. Because if he's throwing that fastball more and that two-seamer like it was last night, yesterday, it was good. And he can work way more off of that. And it looks the same coming out of his hand. I think at that point, the cutter will work better. And you're showing a little
bit. He threw some nasty front door two-seamers to left-handed hitters too, the Greg Maddux pitch.
And that's a great pitch if you have it.
He threw a few of those.
Yeah, that's a really tough pitch if you have it.
Yeah. And it's a dangerous pitch because
you leak it too much. A lot of times, a home run to the right side. It's a Johnny Damon home run over the pole.
If you leave it too much in the middle of the plate, it conveniently matches up with the barrel of a left-handed swing. But if you get it in, it's a nasty pitch that's really tough for left-handed hitters.
No, 100%. So I expect next time out, even though I'm sure that it won't be as right-handed, whoever he's facing next, that two-seamer will get more work and he'll be able to work off of it. But we'll see.
Well, it's interesting.
Eight strikeouts, that's swings and misses, baby. That is not something he's had.
Right. Yeah, the Blue Jays lineup is tough. We saw Gerrit Cole, who didn't give up any runs, but he had to grind through that Blue Jays lineup. Yeah. He's been cruising through every single lineup he has faced this year. The Blue Jays are one of the best offenses in baseball. And you saw what they were able to do to Cole. They made him work, and that's why he was only able to go 5+ innings. So what Clark Schmidt did, like, it was impressive through 5 innings. Should have just pulled him from there. We can stop harping on that point. I mean, overall, I think we touched on this, but we have some numbers here on the Yankees' offensive struggles in the homestand. Judge was 5-34. Torres was 5-36. Cabrera was 5-32, and Trevino was 3-17. It's like all of those guys you need hitting, especially with the rest of the pieces out in the lineup. You can't have four of your key offensive pieces hovering around a 150 batting average on a long homestand. That's why they went they were lucky to go 500 on the homestand.
You know, I saw a tweet from River Avenue Blues guys, who I think is just Mike Exesa at this point. I'm not sure who's running that Twitter account. I think it's just him, but a good point, and we kind of touched on this, but you know, in the past we have guys coming back from injury, and you have some guys that are going to come back in, and you know, additions to the lineup. With Stanton now out for 2 months plus, whatever that is, Bader's the only guy that's really coming back offensively.
Yep,
we're looking at what we have right now. Like this is it. This is what we got.
And you're banking on Bader being playoff Bader.
We're banking on like everyone's Bader like, being somebody that yeah, we hope he is. The guy that they all, you know, traded Jordan Montgomery for 1 year of control. They we hope that he's that guy for sure. But yeah, offensively, like the guys that are out there are the ones that we're gonna be rolling with for the majority of the season. Granted, there's something, anything can happen in the middle of the season, right? For trade
Bader, deadline. Bader helps though.
Because does, but that's it. That's it. Until Stanton comes back, and that's a huge if and when.
Those guys that I mentioned though, you're expecting to rebound. So you add Bader to that mix, and then you don't have Franchi Cordero in the lineup every day, or Willie Calhoun in the lineup, or you know, Peraza, I know he's called up. Like, so IKF playing center field. Like, all of these things are gonna only happen maybe once or twice a week rather than all happening every single game.
Stanton's out. Donaldson was, you know, nothing.
Whatever. Even when he comes back.
But that's a starting third baseman. That's my point. That's a starting third baseman. Like, when you look at the deficiencies that this team has minus those guys, it's actually pretty glaring. There is no third baseman on this team right now. There's not. I know DJ, we said, could slide over there, and that's certainly possible. DJ could play third base more full-time if he wanted to, especially if you kept Peraza up. Like, you have more options at that point. But then you still need a backup first baseman, which DJ is also that guy. And you're looking at some pretty big gaps, honestly, when you're
so are out. You saying don't expect the offense to get any better?
No, I'm saying that these guys have to be better. The current guys that we're looking at, they kind of have to figure it out and fill these holes.
Yeah.
But there's nothing significant that's coming back. Like, would you be surprised if Harrison Bader came back and put up Franchi Cordero numbers? You know, maybe for the first couple of weeks, that would be a good thing. But we don't know what to expect.
I said this at the beginning when we were talking in spring training. It's like, we all really want Harrison Bader to be good. And I think you even mentioned like he needs to be. Didn't we have a conversation, a segment about how Harrison Bader like needs to be good for this team? But he's a career, I think I remember a 98 OPS plus career hitter. He's a league average hitter in his career. So would I be surprised if he's league average offensively? No, because that's what he's been in his career.
Yeah. And now that we see what's going on the base paths, like, he needs to be a menace out there too.
Which and he's going to be amazing defensively. Mm-hmm. He's going to allow Judge to just play right field. Yep. And he's going to allow just the rotation to be happening in left field, which that's all positives to the lineup. And I think he'll be better than league average offensively, but I'm not expecting him to be amazing offensively.
Do you think that when Bader comes back and he's mainstay in center field, that we're going to see IKF a lot more at third base?
Maybe.
I think that's possible.
I mean,
Gold Glove third baseman.
Gold Glove third baseman, and your starting third baseman has had a setback and is old as dirt. I mean, Donaldson's gray hair isn't doing himself any favors, too, for just like everyone just constantly reminded, like, oh, yeah, this guy's old.
He's old. He's 36, going on 37 years old.
It's like the faux hawk, the gray faux hawk is an interesting look, Donaldson.
Yeah, for men's league softball.
And then you have to go to work the next day.
You're like, God damn it.
You have your athletic greens on your way to dropping off Kemp at school today, Scott?
I did. Out the door.
AG1 is a daily supplement packed with 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole foods-sourced ingredients, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. Benefits that we have noticed drinking it every day since the Yankees started their playoff run last year, which is when Athletic Greens first sent us our shipment. Supports mental clarity and alertness, promotes gut health with pre and probiotics, gives better sleep quality and recovery, and boosts your energy. Every serving of AG1 contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no chemicals or artificial flavoring. It's less than $3 per serving as well, which is affordable. If you're someone that goes out to a coffee shop or gets an energy drink or any of that kind of stuff, you're going to be spending less than that for AG1, and you're getting so many good things into your body every single day. You don't have to think about it. What vitamins do I have to buy separately? No, just a scoop of AG1. It's super easy. You scoop it in, you pour it, you shake it, and you drink it. It's delicious. Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews and is trusted by athletes and health experts around the world for good reason. Go to athleticgreens.com/pinstripes for a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs. Again, athleticgreens.com/pinstripes. Check them out. Support us. Support AG1. Good stuff. Let's go to the Saturday, because that was a big win. Like, they could have very easily been swept in this series. Offense was putrid again on Saturday. Manoah, who has been pretty bad all season,
of course,
was kind of toying with them. Did you see what was with him, like, slowly walking from, like, he's such an a-hole, Manoah.
Yeah, he is. I mean, that's the answer to whatever you're going to ask me right now is the guy is a, yeah, he's an antagonist. You know, he's one of these guys that just tries to get under your skin, and he does very obvious things to do that, which, like, to me, on the other side, I'd be laughing at it a little bit because I know what he's doing, and he's very obvious when he tries to do it. It's the guys.
What did you hear Cole's comment?
It's the guys that don't make it obvious that get under your skin are the ones that work. Like, he's a little too, he's
too intentional.
Too intentional.
Yeah. He's transparent. That's what I was saying.
I know you're trying to fuck with me, so you're not fucking with me.
Exactly. So what I was saying in the first 10 minutes of our recording, which happened yesterday,
could have been 3 years ago.
For the listener, they just heard this. But for me, I'm now recalling what I said yesterday. The reason why I don't care that much about what Vlad and Manoah are saying is because they're trying so hard to say it. I'm like, you care so much about this, Alec Manoah, that it's funny. Kind of like when what's-his-face Naylor last year in the playoffs, like, was so over the top. I was like, I've never seen someone do that before rounding the bases. Like, tip of a cap for just going balls out, Josh Naylor. Okay. But I think Garrett Cole's quote when asked, like, oh, do you get extra motivation from what the Blue Jays are saying? He's like, I don't need any extra motivation than what's in our clubhouse or something like that, which another good answer from Garrett Cole. Scott, do you want to?
That's the professional answer.
What did he sound like though when he was saying, like, how did it come out of Cole's
like
mouth?
Like Kermit the Frog. And he said,
You don't want to give a shot at it.
I can't do it. I had it on. It's funny because I had the press conferences on yesterday, and I was listening to them on pretty loud volume, and Bevan heard Garrett Cole talking. I was like, who is that? It just doesn't sound like a pro athlete. But
it's the Yankees' best pitcher.
Yeah, no, it's a good answer. That's the right answer. That's exactly it. You know, the motivation needs to come from in the clubhouse, not the other side. And you know what? Guess what? That when they're talking, they talk about it in the clubhouse, I'm sure. So it's being taken care of at that point. You can't acknowledge that you're noticing it, though. You got to move forward.
Well, Boone went to Holmes in the seventh inning in this game. So you're talking about that fire extinguisher role with the big right-handed hitters coming up for Toronto. He went to Holmes in that spot, which left Wandy there to close the game, which obviously didn't work out, but the Yankees won anyway. I mean, it was still fun to see Volpe get that home run, huge home run, biggest hit so far of the season for him. And just
Peraza ahead of him too.
The joy on his face as he was rounding the bases and everything was really fun to watch. And it was great that DJ was able to walk it off, because again, that game could have very easily been swept this weekend.
Yeah. So a couple things here. Volpe, just nails at that point. Like, when I see a kid, big moment, step up like that, that's huge. It's such a good sign. I mean, that's at home in a 0-0 game against Toronto, like high tension. It's as high tension as you could possibly get at that point. And he delivers. And Peraza, the same thing, getting on base. And then Volpe, putting them ahead. That was a huge home run, I think, for his confidence and for the guys around him. And Garrett Cole talking about Volpe is just like, the kid's a stud. Like, everything about him, they love. And you could tell by the way he talks is that it was, mentioning the intangibles, like winning guy, like, so he preps the right way, does the right things, and brings a lot to the clubhouse. So, I know the batting average doesn't look good and the stat lines don't look great if you're looking at some traditional lines. But if you take the last 20 days, 2 weeks or something,
last 15 games, 10 for 48, 2 homers, 9 walks, 4 RBIs. It's only a .208 batting average, but it's a .333 on base, .729 OPS. Let's not make that sound like he's all-star level, because it's not, but it's an improvement. And he has days like yesterday, Sunday, where he boots a ball on the field and he strikes out and he looks overmatched at the plate. Like, that's going to happen. This kid was basically coming out of AA into the majors, yeah, essentially.
And you know, even the boot, like, that's not a normal thing. Like, that is more of a rare occurrence. He's
been really good defensively. Really good defensively. Some defensive metrics in here. He's been fourth among shortstop in outs above average
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, him coming in, and that was the big debate between the two guys. Offensively, we all knew Volpe was the guy over Peraza with the offensive upside, but the defense was Peraza. Peraza's the known glove between the two of them. But damn, if Volpe is not making everybody turn heads on the way he's playing defense. He's made some really, really good plays. So I'm super happy with everything that he's done. And yeah, for LeMahieu coming through and just putting the guys on their back and getting through. I mean, Rizzo as well. Rizzo's been the mainstay. Rizzo's been the consistent guy throughout this lineup, even with Judge having, not a very good homestand. Rizzo's been the guy basically for the first part of the season here that's been the core dependent bat at the top of that lineup.
And he was stepping in because we talked about Vlad, but we didn't talk about him getting plunked on Friday night. Stepping in, be like, yo, go to first base.
Yeah, stop talking to my guy. He wasn't even engaging, and he's just chirping. So I love that. Rizzo's like the older brother. He's the vet on the team that is going to make sure things are done the right way. So, yeah, I'm glad he stepped in right there. That was the right thing to do. He defended his teammate.
Yeah. So quickly, some more Volpe defensive metrics. He's plus four DRS, which is tied second among shortstop, and he's already amassed half of a defensive WAR, which is tied for fifth in baseball. So he's been a plus defender, and taking errors out of that, he's been a plus defender. So he's first error, but anyway. Anything else from the Saturday game that we should touch on? Trying to remember. I mean, I don't know. Did you see? This is one thing I wanted to touch on. The celebration. So DJ, obviously, he doesn't want to be doused in the Gatorade bath, blah, blah, blah. Did you notice his batting gloves were completely shredded? The palms, they were like, the fingers were intact, but the palms were just his skin. Did you notice
this? No, I didn't. Was it intentional or did it look like it was ripped?
I think it must be intentional. He must like the feeling of the bat on his palm, but wants the grip of on his
fingers.
Doesn't
he normally go no batting gloves?
He always wore batting gloves. But I had never seen the palms of his batting gloves before. Unless they somehow were both ripped.
He might have batting gloves that he likes that just got worn out that he's just sticking with. I don't know. I mean, the palm definitely goes. Usually the fingers go first just because the palms are reinforced. But
Logan just put a picture in the chat if you want to check it out. But it's just like, it looks like someone. So it's like
yeah, that is where they go. Those are old gloves, dude. Those are some old ass gloves that,
you know what that looks like?
You can see the pointer finger as well. Like, yeah, he's just had gloves since college and just doesn't change them.
It's like you take your clubs out for the first time.
The dry rot.
And then you pull your you pull your golf glove out. You're like, all right, I needed a new one 2 years ago and I still haven't got one. Now I got to do this for the third season.
That's like when I pulled my glove out for softball this year. I hadn't played in like 2 years and there's mold on it. So you got to get the leather back in shape. But no, that's definitely some dry rot on those gloves. He plays for the Yankees. He should get some new gloves.
He's superstitious. Clearly.
Yeah. That's some rough shit.
He's got to pull a Posada and pee on his hands so he can build up some
calluses. That's fine. He probably has calluses in those one spots on his palms.
Do you like that Boone has been doing this bullpen I'm not calling it a by committee because it's really only Holmes who seems to be the guy who sometimes he'll go earlier in the game if it's a key spot in the lineup. Do you like this? Is it working? Because I don't think it's working so far. I mean, in theory, it should work, but like it didn't work on Saturday.
But Wandy's been so good. You know, he's had so few spots where he hasn't. Where he's let up runs and he hasn't, done the job. It wouldn't surprise if Holmes kept struggling. It wouldn't surprise me if we see Wandy in the closer spot at some point because he's just so dependable. Yeah, I think it works, especially for early in the season. It's like you let guys settle in. You get you're trying to win games in any way that you can. The bullpen does have a bunch of injuries. That is one area that we're going to get more guys back with Loaiza, Trevino. There are possibly Canely, who knows, But there are opportunities there for more solidification, I'd say, of that bullpen. But right now, I don't mind it. I think it's definitely an early beginning of the season thing that he's doing, though.
Do you think that has to do with the fact that they've got so many injuries in the bullpen?
Yes.
And that when Trevino and Kainley and more bodies are back, someone, if it's Holmes or whoever it is, will just be the ninth inning guy.
And I think things will figure itself out once there's more options, and the guys that he's expecting are back there, then things will just kind of level out and fall in place as they should. So that's it. I think that right now it's just kind of tinkering around. But when you have, you know, some key opportunity, I do think that he'll go, even if Holmes is the quote closer, like he's been, Boone has used him in multiple spots in the past. So I would not surprise me if that just stayed the way it is for the eighth, ninth inning guy.
Yeah. Well, I told you guys about Shady Rays at the top of the episode, and I'm here to show off my awesome pair of Shady Rays on. You got yours on you, Scott? Are they in the
not
car?
Not on me. Yeah, I don't have them on me right now.
Yeah. Mine are on screen right now. I won't put them on because I'm not wearing my contacts, and then I won't be able to read the copy here. But Shady Rays is an amazing sunglasses company. They're world-class, just as good as any expensive pair you can buy. I already told you that amazing lost and broken policy where if even on day one, they're just going to ship you a new pair. Also, if you get your pair in the mail, you put them on, you're like, yeah, you know what? I'm not feeling this style. You can exchange them, no questions asked as well. That's huge when you're buying something online. The frames are durable, which is important when you're doing outdoor activities. I've worn them to do yard work. I'm planning on wearing them this summer on the golf course and at Yankee Stadium. And if you're like anybody, you're probably have lost a pair of sunglasses in your life, or you've broken them. And that's a terrible feeling because you spent a lot of money on them and then poof, they're gone. With Shady Rays, you don't have to worry about that. You can buy with confidence. Shady Rays is giving our listeners their best deal. Go to ShadyRays.com and use promo code Bronx for 50% off two or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. Check them out. We know you are going to love them. Thank you to Shady Rays for sponsoring today's show. And for anyone out there who's looking for a new pair of sunglasses, Father's Day is coming up. Great. Get two pairs, one for you, one for Dad. It's beautiful. Father's Day is coming up, right?
No, Mother's Day is first.
It's Father's Day. Yeah, Mother's Day is first.
It's been like 2 weeks. Father's Day is in June.
Is it? I know Father's Day is in June.
Mother's Day is in May. Okay,
it's in 2 weeks.
You shouldn't even know when Father's Day is, to be honest. You should know when Mother's Day is.
Father's Day is my birthday. I was born on Father's Day. And I might have my second kid on
Father's Day?
On my birthday or on Father's Day. Dude, the baby's due that week. So
well, you don't like Father's Day then, because you're gonna lose any celebrations with all these birthdays.
I don't get it.
Just getting screwed. I don't
give a crap. Yeah. Yeah. What else is there? do we have injury updates? So I saw this morning some injury news on Carlos Rodon, right? It's
yeah, everything's fine.
He's back. Everything's fine.
Another test. Everything's fine. Cranky back. Just hoping it loosens itself out. Basically, he slept wrong. You know, he needs a memory foam mattress that will align to his spine and stop sleeping on springs. They're no good for you.
That's the thing. It's like once you're his, like your back isn't gonna feel 100% ever. So were they just being way overly cautious with this?
No, I mean, none of us know what he felt, but yeah, if I mean, dude, I rake the yard sometimes, you pinch a nerve in your back and it feels like your back is broken in half.
I know.
So there's a million things that could happen that take a little while to figure themselves out, especially if there's a nerve involved or any kind of inflammation that will then pinch a nerve. So no, I'm happy that they've gotten multiple tests and nothing is wrong at all with the back. So now they're just essentially letting it decompress, do whatever it needs to do, and then get back into your throwing. But the elbow is intact, the arm's intact, everything's good. So it shouldn't be that much longer for him. It really shouldn't.
They're saying June. They're saying a June
return. Now we're a month away. God damn it. That's halfway through the season. It's crazy.
Yeah, but nothing. May's not. Next week is May.
Yeah, I know. Okay, I want to see a. I want to see a May.
He didn't have a. He didn't have a spring training.
Yeah,
he threw one inning.
I remember he threw too hard. He overexerted on that.
It's probably Severino. I mean, I think they're probably eyeing Severino back in the next 4 weeks, and then Rodon back 2 to 4 weeks after that.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, so by the All-Star break, we'll have a rotation unless they get injured again.
Yep.
Well, that's good. So, you know, look, I'm just happy that his back is fine and that's not an issue. That moving forward, that's a big deal. Goddamn, we need him.
Yeah, because, I mean, the way the standings are, the Yankees are in fourth place. I mean, at what point are we going to start eyeing the standings and eyeing Tampa, who's...
Tampa, dude, I have the Orioles. This is what I was telling you. I was warning about Orioles. The Orioles are trouble. They're trouble. And if they find it a little early, like they're doing right now, find some momentum early, like they're doing right now, they're trouble because they're very talented. If they get anything from these pitching arms, they're trouble. They're going to be better than anybody expects, and they're going to be right there at the end.
Rutschman's leading in on base percentage, isn't he?
I'm telling you.
I think they
Hall of Famer. Kid's going to be a Hall of Famer.
Well, but the Yankees are 6 games back of Tampa right now. They're tied with the Blue Jays. Baltimore is in second place. At what point do we start standings watch? Because a team gets off, I know not now, but when a team gets off to such a hot start as Tampa did, and the rest of the division just sort of clumped together.
It just doesn't matter as much anymore, the division lead at this point. With the amount of playoff spots that are there, that's what you're looking at. So it's got time to figure itself out. Yeah, there's still plenty of opportunities at the division, but again, not the worst thing in the world if you don't get it at this point because of the way that the playoff structure is. You have opportunities to get into the dance, and so it's fine. And it's April.
Yankees opportunity start this week with Minnesota. You excited for tonight's game? Sonny Gray pitching against the Yankees for the second time since leaving?
Yeah, I'm a little nervous.
He's been good.
I know he's been good. He's got the best ERA in the American League, I think. He's been good. You go to just put him in a small market. That's all he needs. Just needs a small market.
Yeah, against Brito tonight. Cortez versus Joe Ryan and then Herman versus Kenta Maeda.
I would have loved to have... Can we get one more day? Like, give me Clark Schmidt against Sonny Gray. That would have been something. That would have been like that. That could have put us over the hump. That would have been nice to see. But Brito, he's gonna go toe to toe. I hope. And you know what? Like, you know, Sonny Gray, he's lucky that he's not pitching in a place that he would get yelled at quite often.
So I think Ilya, you put this in chat, but Joey Gallo, do you know about? Isn't Joey Gallo like? Wasn't he hitting like 290 or something?
Is he back? He was not playing in the last game. Down to 235. Yeah, it turned out okay. Exactly that. So that's that two seamer that comes back over the plate. Joey Gallo's just praying to God that happens every time.
You know what would happen with a Clark Schmidt versus Joey Gallo matchup? Because there's just so many different factors there. One guy can't hit. One guy can't pitch against lefties. It's just.
I mean, it's I take Schmidt all day long. The odds are in your favor. Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to talk about before we wrap up?
I'm curious as to what you guys think Peraza's role is moving forward because I'm a little confused on him and where he's going to go. He's been good. He played third base for the first time. I wonder if they're trying to look to see what that looks like and almost like looking for opportunities to keep him up. At this point, because they're trying to keep some lightning in a bottle with some young guys. They know what IKF is. They know. I feel like the Yankees don't want to put. So I asked that question earlier about Donaldson, if he's out an extended period of time, if IKF's going to go over there. I don't think the Yankees want to do that. I think they like him in the utility role where he's going all over the place. I think they like him in that spot. But I do think that Peraza right now has an opportunity. If he plays third base and does it well and gets some things going on with the bat, if he's up here long enough to prove that, I wouldn't be surprised.
So you're saying keep him up for what? Because when Donaldson's ready to come back.
It's not. I don't think Donaldson's the only roster move that allows the Yankees to send him back down, though. Because if Bader's up, in theory, IKF now could be more of a utility guy on the infield, right? So then Peraza.
Are we expecting Bader to come back before Donaldson at this point?
Definitely. One of them's in rehab, one of them's not.
In rehab.
Rehab assignments.
You don't say someone who's recovering, who's playing in the minors in rehab. So when Bader comes back, who's coming off the roster?
Aaron Hicks.
Well, who's actually coming off
the roster? Aaron Hicks. Has he played? When's he played last? Probably, he hasn't played in a week.
It's probably Willie Calhoun, right? Willie Calhoun?
Legitimately, Willie Calhoun or Aaron Hicks. I'll keep Willie Calhoun.
So Franchi has an option. Calhoun does not. So, but I don't think.
I think it's coming fast, more sooner than you think it is. I think it's coming sooner than you think it is. Sooner than I even thought it was going to come. He's got no utility on this team right now. None. He's not even playing in the outfield.
How are we going to celebrate when Hicks gets DFA'd? We should do a in memoriam Aaron Hicks emergency episode.
No.
We recap all of
our. Why don't we go play golf and podcast from the golf course?
No. Our favorite Aaron Hicks moments. Quick. Scott, what's your favorite Aaron Hicks moment?
When we got him and the hope was there for John Ryan Murphy, I was like, oh man, this guy could be a toolsy guy. That was the biggest moment I had. And then I realized he wasn't. So my hope for him was the biggest moment.
There's two Aaron Hicks moments, like two legitimately cool Aaron Hicks moments. The diving catch in Minnesota.
So you're not going to do it when he gets released? You're going to do it now?
Well, I realized that episode will be like 6 minutes long, and that's not really anything. So the diving catch in Minnesota, right? That's one of the cooler moments.
Oh, yeah. The one that was a cool moment.
Yeah.
The 109-mile-an-hour.
The 109-mile-an-hour throw. And then maybe the.
Yeah, I think you should stop. I think Ilya's right. I think you're jinxing him not being released now. Because we're yeah, you're doing it ahead of time. Yeah, now we're just screwed. Now we're going to get blamed for him staying on the team the entire year.
What about that time he went on the IL?
Yeah, that one time. That was cool. Other guys got opportunities.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. What about that time he complained about his playing time?
That just happened. He hasn't played in a week, so he should be complaining about it now. If especially because the Yankees haven't scored more than three runs in 97 years.
Do you think he's already like putting his apartment on the market? Do you think he owns an apartment?
No.
He signed a 7-year contract, so he probably owns something in New York.
I don't know. I don't think there's no. I think he's got some places in warmer weather. Because immediately when he got with his arm rehab, right, he was sending videos from Arizona, wherever that was, of him throwing, even when he wasn't supposed to throw. He doesn't even listen to instructions. He's a bad employee.
When Bader comes back and you let, say, Willie Calhoun go, you're saying keep Peraza on the roster and keep IKF? I mean, that's
but no, my point is what you just said. Like, Peraza would probably be the guy to go down to get more shortstop reps, and you keep another outfielder because then IKF can really be more. When I don't know how often IKFs can be playing out in the in center field. You could get Judge in center field when Bader's not there. I mean, granted, IKF's been good, but
oh, I forgot to tell you this. So I mentioned that my parents were in town, and my dad, when IKF made a play in center field, he's like, IKF's been pretty good in center field. He made those diving catches. So I thought I told him about the catch probability. His head exploded. He was like, what are you talking about? What is this sorcery
stat
catch probability you are telling me about? He basically told me to shut up.
I mean, I'm with him. It doesn't take into factor all the things as it should. And he made the goddamn catch.
They were good. That's basically what he said.
Made the goddamn catch.
That's going to wrap it up for today's show. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for suffering through what was probably an awkward transition from the first part to the second part. And we will talk to you later this week.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.